Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back. Welcome back. I'm here with my co-host,
Carol Peterson.
And we're here for the New Year's Eve show. I always love this show. I love it for two reasons. I love it because it's the end of the year and we get to summarize what's happened all year long. And that's always fun to look at things from a different vantage point, but also because in doing that, we also get to look forward to the future. So are you ready for that, Carol? And we also have, we have the nutrient of the year. And we're going to discuss that. So we've got quite a lineup today. And I would also like you to enter the conversation because this is our show, yours and ours. And the number to call is 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. Give us a call. Let us hear from you because it's been a whole year and a lot has gone on this year. So, Carol, I was thinking that we might want to begin on what last year looked like. To me, it was dramatic. And the drama of it was this incredibly new interest or dramatically large interest in nutritional health. And so maybe we could start out because you just came back. You just came back from a very big conference. I used to go to that conference quite a few years ago, and there were 300, 400 people there. Well, you just came back from the conference, and there were 5,000 people.
Yes.
What was that like?
And 650 vendors.
Oh, my God. That's overwhelming for me.
And it is overwhelming, and there's so much. And this movement started with Dr. Ron Klatz and Dr. Bob Goldman over 40 years ago. And their premise is aging is not inevitable, that we have the means to stop the aging process. And when you think about it, we teach people in medical schools and even the public, we teach them you have to get sick and die. And why do you have to do the sick part? One doctor I heard speaking once talked about teaching in Denmark, and he said the Danish used to have a word, and I unfortunately don't remember the word, that meant that you were dying full of days. And I really love this concept. And he was saying the younger generation students couldn't believe that you could just use up all your days and die in fairly good health, that you don't have to have misery enter into your lifespan. And Dr. Klatz coined that term anti-aging medicine, and he took a lot of flack about that in that people are saying you can't be against aging because we all age, right?
I remember Dr. Ali said, well, anti-aging, if you're not aging, you're dying.
There's a constant process that is happening day by day, and that is an aging process.
Well,
so
that's
not the enemy.
Yeah,
aging is not the enemy. It's ill health and inflammation that's the enemy.
Dr. Ali, this reminds me of running into him. He was at an A4M meeting, and he had a booth. And he said to me, "I don't even know why I'm here." He said, "Show me a peach that doesn't rot." And
exactly.
Then we can talk. And, you know, this disturbed me for many, many years. And finally, I got it. He used the wrong metaphor. It's not the peach. It's the peach tree. That's the whole organism. And we can keep a peach tree living a long time and living a healthy life. If the soil is good, the water is good, the air is good, there's no reason that a peach tree can't thrive as it gets older. So nothing to do about the peach. So,
I know I've heard him say that also. So what we're really looking at, and it's interesting because one of our greatest fears as we age is to lose our mind, to be physically here, but not mentally here, not emotionally here, just to cease to be you and just be a body. And that it used to be that everybody was afraid of cancer, and then they were afraid of cardiovascular disease. And now the big fear right now, and that when you speak to people, is Alzheimer's and losing our mind and dementia. And as we age, having dementia, when that happens, you lose your identity, you lose yourself. And as we're finding out piece by piece, more and more researchers are exploring this, but as we're finding out, that might not be necessary, that can be delayed or that process can be turned off. Your mom lived till 96?
94.
And 94.
She went into the hospital because she thought she had COVID, and that was the end of her. And I'm not going to go on that rabbit hole right now, but...
But she was clear as...
She was sharp as anything. Uh-huh. And living on her own and doing quite well. And your
with
mom...
With a boyfriend?
Too, with a boyfriend.
I know. I wish that on you, Carol.
Oh, thank you.
And my mom died at 100. And up till 2 months before she died, I would send her, we'd do these crossword puzzles. And when I would get stuck, I'd do a screenshot and send it to my mom. And she would send me back the answers. She was as sharp as you could be, all the way to 100 years old and 7 months. 100 years old and 7 months. That is wonderful. We wanted it 105, but unfortunately that didn't work out. But we'll take 100 because it was 100 very good years. So, Carol, do you have any thoughts on what creates, and this is what all the research is doing right now, but what creates that level of longevity and clarity in people, and why some people live to an older age and they're clear as and sharp as a tack, and others start losing it in their 70s, start getting confused, walk into a room and say, "Oh, what did I come here for?" And it progresses and progresses and progresses. And beginning earlier. And then finally, it progresses into a loss of memory.
Well, and a loss of a lot of things. This is interesting because the keynote speaker, now we don't have his name on hand because I made no attempt to pay attention, but I did hear him speak. And he's been known to be researching the blue zone areas. And the blue zones are places where they've identified more people per capita living to 100 and beyond, and more people living to 90 and beyond. And one of the famous places is Sardinia. Dr. Walter Longo looked at Sardinia a lot, but he said it's not all of Sardinia. It's just this one part of Sardinia that has,
up in the hills, up in the mountains.
Yeah, because these people are walking constantly up and down hills. And one of the things that's really part of their life is a lot of movement and a lot of work. They're busy doing stuff, and everything they do requires climbing up or climbing down.
Well, they found that the blue zone in Sardinia extends. There's one area up in the mountains, and then there's a lower area. But they find the higher area has higher age groups. And they're saying that they believe that the stress of the walking up and down and up and down, because it's a very mountainous area, and there's steps carved into the roadways. So you're walking up the steps to get a loaf of bread or to get whatever, and then you're going down the stairs to go back home and to eat lunch and to rest and all of this. But I think there's a few factors, and I saw that in the movie, the brand new movie on the Blue Zones that was just put out.
And it was probably produced by this guy, whatever his name is. I'm sorry.
There's some parts I didn't quite agree with him about. He talked about diet. He talked about exercise. And he focused on those. But what I saw very definitely as he was filming, that these people were outside. They were getting vitamin D all day, every day, as they were walking. They were also part of the society. One of the women that they visited, her family, that she didn't have family. She was a woman who had no children, but her nieces and nephews came and visited her every day. So you'd see a room with a meal, a lunch, early dinner, lunch, meal. You'd see the older woman, you'd see the adults, then you'd see younger people, and then you'd see little kids running around the floor. And so they were a part of the society.
I think that's a huge
And they were
one.
Valued.
It's probably the most important one of everything in my estimation.
Yeah. The fact that one, they were part of society. They were valued. They still had, they were still able to contribute to the society, and they felt valued. Uh-huh. And in each community, I saw that. I saw it on an island in Greece, which is a blue zone. I saw
Icaria.
It's an island with no natural port, so there were no Europeans that came and docked there and then introduced their culture. It was totally isolated until recently. And as a result, they have maintained their culture. They have maintained their foods. Everything they ate and had was local to the area. And they had a very close and tight society. The same with the Okinawans. The Okinawans walked everywhere, had a very tight and close society. But guess what? The Okinawans, their blue zone is going away. And they're, because of their popularity and people coming, they've introduced all these processed foods into the society. And so people are not as healthy as they were. They're getting heavy and they're not as healthy. So you've got these very important factors. And one of them that's consistent, well, there's a few that are consistent that you see carried through, although their diets are different. They're all different. They're all local diets, local to the area.
They're all real food.
They're all real food.
I saw a little announcement. Somebody's perfected a lab-grown meat.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Which makes me wonder if they're trying to imitate meat, if it's not really an affirmation that meat is good for you. So they're trying to copy it, just like we just did with mother's milk, with all these formulas that really can never, never, never replace mother's milk. Yet where we voice these things into our society, it's incredible to me how marketing can change attitudes. And growing something in a laboratory, they're going to be probably marketing pretty heavily to us that real meat is toxic or something, and we need to rely on some kind of laboratory grown meat. And why would we even have meat? Just don't eat meat if you don't think you should eat meat, rather than do the imitation stuff. And it's shocking to me that people would go ahead and order a Beyond Burger and think that this is good for their body and soul. It really is frightening to me.
Well, Beyond Burger is frightening to me, but a bowl of beans, a bowl of lentils,
yeah,
a bowl of cannellini beans with garlic and onion and carrots all chopped up in it, and a tomato crushed with your hand. That is wonderful and very good for you. But when you start making a Beyond Burger, it's gone through. I cannot not name the number of chemical processes it has gone through to be able to become fake meat. And why do we want fake meat? Hummus is absolutely delicious, and it's not fake anything. Uh-huh. It's chickpeas, tahini, which are sesame seeds that are ground, and chickpeas that are ground with olive oil, sometimes a little garlic, and then served with parsley chopped up on top of it. And what gets better than that? We don't need fake anything.
Right. We need protein, and you can get plant protein as well as animal protein. Plant protein is a bit harder to use in the quantities that our body needs to have protein. It's hard. But yet, you know, once I had this woman call, and she had a diagnosis of maybe breast cancer. And she had had like 4 different biopsies, and I think 3 were negative, 1 was positive, and she kept doing biopsies. And she was vegan. And I said, I think you really need to change your diet into something more like paleo for better health. And sometime later, she called me. And what does she switch to? She switched to all these soy protein fake meats that you can find in the health food store, which I think they don't belong there, because it gives them the patina that this is a healthy thing. Once I walked into my local health food store and the owner's like drinking a quart of chocolate soy milk because it was about to go out of date. And I go, oh my God, what are you doing? This is like too much soy protein, which is really difficult to assimilate. So you're going to give your body a pretty hard time by loading it up with a whole quart of soy milk. So we think being in a health food store, it must be healthy for us, but maybe not.
I think that that's something we all have to consider. We have to consider it within ourselves and for our families, but also for our children. Because what we're looking at is we're looking at, well, at every age. You know, oh, this is something I wanted to say. This has been a year of empowerment. It's really been powerful in that people have, at least through our show, we have spent show after show after show showing that our ability to balance our hormones was within our power. Within our power, we could do it. Our ability to maintain a high level of health and lower our inflammation was within our power. And I can go on and on and on. And that's one thing that we had mentioned it prior, but now it really is a powerful understanding that we have built into, you know, our knowledge base. And now we just, this year, I do believe what we will be doing is focusing on the methods to create that empowerment. There's another word that just every other show or every show kind of highlighted was inflammation. Inflammation. The year before it was microbiome. Last year it was inflammation. And everything pivots on a level of inflammation. And very powerful, very important to understand our role and our ability to control and make change. It's quite exciting because it takes everything away from someone over there and gives it back to us, and then we can create the change. It's okay, a wonderful thing to teach our families. Go on, Carol.
I'm going to jump into that and then jump into where we're going with our supplement of the year.
Oh, here, let me just give the phone call. 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. Call us and join the conversation. Go on, Carol.
Okay, because of inflammation, there's even this term called inflammaging.
Oh, yes.
That this constant
good word.
Chronic inflammation is part of what ages your body. And you get stuck. Your body is supposed to maybe react to something, and then it's supposed to clear it away. You're supposed to clear up these immune complexes that your body chose to use to protect you. And sometimes we don't do that well enough, and inflammation ensues and continues. So there are enzymes that help break up those complexes, and they're called proteolytic enzymes. And Corinne and I both voted on the nutrient of the year, and we decided on a proteolytic enzyme called natazyme. And natazyme will clear out these complexes. It's gotten particularly famous because in this COVID area, doctors started doing a test called D-dimer. And when the D-dimer level rises, it is a marker for microcoagulations. Microcoagulations mean you get clots of red blood cells. Yeah, so it can't go into your capillaries, the very finest part of your circulatory system. is only big enough to allow one red blood cell at a time to get through, and that's if you squeeze it a little. So
if it's able to bend.
Yeah, it's able to bend. And imagine if this goes away, that you've got two or three of those clumped together. So the D-dimer test, and I've been asking more people to run that test. One of the solutions is nattokinase. The D-dimer indicator of microcoagulations will come down with the use of nattokinase.
Now, the thing about nattokinase, there's lots of research. There's a nattokinase, a serrapeptidase, and a lumbrokinase. The nattokinase is from soy, fermented soy, but there's no soy in it. It's already been digested down by the enzymes. And then the serrapeptidase is an enzyme that silkworms use to make silk, although there are no silkworms in it, and there's no silk either. It's the enzyme that they use to make the silk. And then the lumbrokinase, that is literally, that has the least amount of research on it, but very good anecdotal statements. And that is ground worms, earthworms. And all of those act as a proteolytic enzyme. And when we're talking about benefits, what are they? They're talking about possibly blocking the spread of the spike protein. Again, these are all anecdotal. They're talking about breaking up plaque. Now, this is not anecdotal. What they found was that, you know, there's a recommended dose, and it's about 1,500 to 1,200, and they use nattokinase, 1,500 to 1,200.
Different companies. It might be like FU is one of them.
Don't swear.
Probably means functional units or something.
Oh, okay. Of cases, NKFU daily.
There you and go.
Exactly. And so there, it's generally 1,500 to 2,000 FU units daily. That's the recommended dose. Well, this study was done, and of total cases, over 1,000 people, over a year long. And what they used was 10,000 FU. And what they found, the end result, was that of 1,662, 1,013 had extreme improvement. They found that total cholesterol went down in 905 significantly. And LDL cholesterol, which supposedly isn't the best cholesterol, went down in 895 of the cases. HDL cholesterol, that went up in 946%, 946 of the cases. And that's the cholesterol. It's like a cleansing, healthy cholesterol. And then they're also, when they looked at inflammation rate, the inflammation rate went significantly down, but also what they saw in arteries was that the artery expanse had slightly increased. So you had better flow, you had a total complete shift in the in cholesterol ratios from unhealthy to healthy, because it changed the triglycerides, it changed the LDL. it increased the HDL, but it also increased circulation in plaque-covered arteries. So this was a pretty exciting study. And so what they're finding is natto kinase is very important for cardiovascular disease.
And okay, I have some hearsay I can pass on because I heard from one of the participants at a forum. There was a lecture, and it was a three-prong therapy for plaque, and plaque was resolving. It was EDTA, which chelates heavy metals. It was natto kinase, and it was phospholipids. So at this point, I have no further information. When I get exact details, we'll talk about it on the radio one day. So why don't we do this? Also, I wanted to interject here that I loved this particular book by Malcolm Kendrick. He's a physician, cardiologist type in England. He wrote a book called The Clot Thickens.
I like
murder mysteries anyway. But what a delightful read, because he permeates this idea of a mystery throughout his collection of what's in the literature. And actually, in plaque, there's very little cholesterol. Where if you analyze the ingredients, what is there is a lot of fibrin, which is what's clotting, and hence the title of the book, The Clot Thickens. So your body is actually creating scabs, actually. If you could imagine on your skin, you cut yourself, you have a scab. What if that scab never healed entirely and you hurt it again, and you get layers of scab forming? That's what happens in plaque. Very likely, his hypothesis really fits what the plaque is actually made of. So to have that, something like natto kinase is really, really important, because natto kinase does work on this step where fibrinogen turns into fibrin. This is a protein, and it helps break down that protein, so it's not getting all lodged into your blood vessels. So it's pretty fascinating. I think this whole idea. One of the things we're talking about. The older I get, the less I know, I think, because. Do you remember going back in your education how much of that is really holding up and holding true? You go to school and you learn certain things, and then all of a sudden you run into ideas that are simply not fitting what you learned before. And certainly aging, as we're talking about right now, fits into the category. How many times have we heard stories of people in distress going to the doctors and they say, oh, never mind, you're just getting old. It's to be expected that there is no available reversal of these chronic things that age us. So and sometimes we die of the treatments. We have a plethora of drugs that are being administered to us, enthusiastically, I might add. And do they really correct the problem, or are they just trying to control some of the symptoms? But at the same time, drugs do not have side effects. They have effects. And not always do you get an effect you want. It's going to do what it's going to do, and you can't stop it from doing what it's going to do. So it's kind of misleading to say, oh, this is the side effect. It might come up or it might not. Very likely it's going to come up. Corinne?
Hello?
Yeah, are you here?
Okay. Yeah. this coming year is an important year, because I think this year is going to exponentially empower us. I think this year forward, is a year of empowerment. And more than that, I think the means to empowerment is just being studied constantly. There is such a big push right now to move our knowledge base forward. I want to put out a little word of warning, okay? Because I study this all the time. I constantly looking at the new information that's being put out and constantly looking at it. And there are some people with with some very good credentials. And yet I completely disagree with them, completely. I think that they don't really have an understanding of the body. They have a book knowledge, but they don't have an actual understanding of what is happening and how to make things better. So it's going to be our job within. Now, as you know, and we know, right now, everywhere you turn, everybody is a nutrition expert. And I remember Jason Fung, the doctor, Jason Fung, he was on a radio show before. He wrote the complete book on fasting.
The obesity code, the diabetes code, and cancer code.
And exactly, and polycystic ovary disease. He wrote all these books. And he said, you know, if you want to know something black and white, ask a PhD. Because that's what they deal in. They deal in black and whites. He says, if you want to understand the nuances and be humbled by the body, ask an MD. Because people who are working with patients, people who are working with patients, and they put out a theory and work with the patient on the theory, and the bodies don't respond the way the book says they should. Not at all. They're always creating nuances. This needs to be adjusted. That needs to be adjusted. So healing is a combination of your knowledge and nuances that make it work and make it apply to you personally. So all of these come together. And I think that's where this year is going to go. This year is going to be a flood, a waterfall of information bigger than the Victoria Falls, the largest waterfall in the world. Bigger than that, the information is going to be coming fast and furiously. And it's very important within all that that we don't get led up the yellow brick road, that we maintain our ability to differentiate and what is real and what isn't. And that takes a little bit of focus, a little bit of understanding, not just listening to what's on the radio or on YouTube or on in these magazines that are being sent to your house. You really need to look at the source. And lots of times there's all these studies that they're quoting. If you look at the study, they're rat studies. Well, thank you very much. That hasn't helped me much. I haven't had a rat baby lately.
I immediately dismissed those in the mice studies. And you know, they're torturing mice. And when you read an article, medical article, they call it murine specimens. I go, why are they trying to disguise the fact that they're using mice? Just say mice.
Just murine. Why is it called murine?
Beats me, but I've noticed that But it's okay. Here we go. Another big assumption. We make assumptions that somehow the rat or the mice or the guinea pig or even chimpanzees or dogs, their physiology and metabolism somehow relates to ours. And they're quite unique. I attended American Holistic Veterinary Association once. I think these people are the smartest in the world because unlike human doctors, they have to learn the physiology for each and every type of animal they treat. And they know you don't treat a parrot like a dog, for instance.
It's, oh, really?
Yeah, imagine that. You don't treat a mice like a chicken.
That's what, Carol.
What? We
have
that's
someone holding. Yes. Mm-hmm. Hello. Your life. Your name, please. And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
How can we help you?
I want to know the nattokinase and the lumbrokinase. Can you take them? Which is better? Can you take them together? And are there upper limits warning for taking either one?
Well, so far they found no toxic dose at all of either of them.
I can answer this. They're both proteolytic enzymes. Lumbrokinase is a lot stronger. And contrary to what Corinne said, and years ago I looked into this, there's a huge amount of studies done, and they're based in China and Korea. And I was trying to refine those studies not that long ago, and I simply couldn't find them. At the time, they were translations of studies, but lumbro is a great deal stronger, so you can potentially take less of it. One of my colleagues just told me that she was advised, she's been struggling with some persistent infection, and it involves probably multiple organisms in a biofilm. They form colonies in your body and have a polysaccharide coating around it, and these enzymes can chew that up too, and then it frees your body's immune system to go after these organisms. She's been suffering for quite a long time. She was advised to take 15 lumbrokinase 3 times a day.
Whoa.
Do this for a week, and that put her over the top into a good place. She's starting to regain her health now. So it was like an aggressive treatment. And as Corinne said, we don't know an upper limit. I hope that answers your question.
You can take them together.
Yeah.
But they, most of the time, they overlap. And so, like Carol said, the lumbrokinase is stronger. And the nattokinase has a little bit of broader, but lots of times they overlap. So you could take one lumbrokinase and multiple nattokinase, and there you've got a treatment. They also found that when people took CoQ10 and when people took vitamin K, that they had a higher response from these enzymes. So you might want to add to your protocol a little, some vitamin K and some CoQ10. And now you've got something very heart healthy as well as an anti-inflammatory. So thank you so much.
When you say vitamin K, which one? You got several different vitamin K.
K2?
Okay.
Yep.
K2. Uh-huh.
Thank you.
And, yeah, my pleasure. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Thank you. So, yay. I love talking to people.
Uh-huh.
Okay, go on, Carol.
Where were we?
We were on... the ability.
Oh, let me just say, you brought up serpeptidase, which is which is interesting because you interviewed Dr. Alan Warshawski not that long ago on fibroids.
Yes.
Enzymes are sometimes recommended for fibroid treatment, and serrapeptidase happens to have the most research on it for the treatment of fibroids. So does that mean it's the only choice? I think not, but that's where the research has gone.
Well, that's interesting. That didn't really come up in our conversation. So that's very interesting. And so these are proteolytic enzymes, and fibroids are a protein, accumulation of protein. So what we're trying to do with these enzymes is begin to literally chew away or break down the outer coating of the fibroid so the body can then identify it and start breaking down this foreign body. So that's very interesting. So
we have more callers.
Oh, I love it. Hello. You're live. Your name, please.
Yes. Greetings. Happy New Year to everyone.
Thank you.
This is Mayat calling. A very interesting program. I'd like to, more of, because when you were starting out, I couldn't even get the words down so easily. And, of course, I do my best to spell it phonetically. So I'd like to know where we can go to get more information and a larger view. And the other aspect of my question and concern, because when we talk about supplements, what I find is helpful, because people are different sizes. Some people are not quite 100 pounds, say maybe about 100 pounds. But I find, I'd like your comment in terms of being more helpful to some of us by saying for each 100 pounds, this is a suggested recommendation. And I'll listen over the air. Thank you for the program.
Now, but there's one question I didn't understand. You said something, you didn't hear the spelling or the pronunciation, but you didn't say what word it was.
She's off.
Okay, well, there's natokinase, NATTOKINASE. There's serrapeptase. serrapeptase. And then there's lumbrokinase, lumbrokinase. And I hope those were the words you were talking about.
Yeah, she was asking about dosages according to weight.
Well,
and sometimes it is appropriate and sometimes no, because our basic human functioning has a need for stuff. So is your need for thiamine, say, is that based on your body weight? Not necessarily. People have various needs for it. They may need a little bit. They may need a whole lot. There's some wonderful research done in the use of thiamine at very, very large
doses. That's B1.
Yep, mm-hmm. For neurological things. So it isn't weight-based. It's based on how big
nutrient
need-based. Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. So, and that, I remember a study showing, and we've got one more caller, I hope they're still there, showing that Jewish children of those who escaped the prison camps had very, very high needs for niacin. And that lasted a couple of generations. So
very interesting.
Yeah, so I saw that. So, hi, you're live. Your name, please.
Hello, I'm calling from Brooklyn.
From where?
Brooklyn.
Can you speak up just a little bit, please?
Yeah, hello.
Perfect.
How better?
I wonder, has there already been a study on whether a vegetarian diet would help a person or avert a person having Alzheimer's and dementia?
Oh, go on.
And also, culturally, do you find the same amount of Alzheimer's and dementia in ethnic groups like, for instance, the Japanese, who eat a high diet of fish and vegetables than you do in America? Thank you.
Well, thank you for that question. That is a wonderful question. And right now, if you go and start looking and start studying, there is such a diversity of opinion on vegetarian or non-vegetarian in relationship to Alzheimer's, in relationship to longevity. There seems to be a consensus on one thing, that people need adequate protein, not high doses, but adequate protein. But there's no consensus on how to get that, on either to get it through grain, through beans, through seeds, or to get it that through fish, or through meat. So I think we're learning more. And when we look at these, they went over 5 different blue zones. They were very low meat blue zones. They didn't have high meat. Some of them had fish maybe once or twice a week maximum, but they didn't have large amounts of red meat. Some had pork. In Sardinia, they had pork, and that would be once or once a week, once every other week. There wasn't any strict program. And then there were the one in Greek, Icaria, the Greek one, they ate sheep. They ate a lamb. And they made sausages, and it was a blue zone. But they also had large amounts of fresh vegetables and beans, and they made their own breads out of a very ancient grain. And so I don't think it's one thing or another. There's an agreement in that we know we need adequate protein, but how to get that protein, we're still looking at that. What do you think about that, Carol?
Well, this came up actually during a lecture that I heard again at A4M. And it's, some of the studies don't really make great distinctions. Like if you're vegetarian, are you actually using whole foods? Or are you doing the fake foods? Are you eating junk food? You have to sort that out. And the same goes for the meat eaters. Is your source of meat, is it a clean source? Or is it been tampered with? I just did research for another little thing. I learned that it was really common to stick hormones into the ears of cows, both bioidentical hormones and non-bioidentical hormones, to my horror. So we're being affected by other things in our diet. And a lot of studies don't sort that out. Like, were the sources clean? Or even if you eat whole foods as a vegetarian, there's so much glyphosate being sprayed on crops all over that there's cross-contamination of plant sources of food as well. And that's a horrible toxin for our body. So what's this going to tell us? I would say if you're eating a glyphosate laden diet and you can test for it, I would worry about your chances of Alzheimer's because of the effect of that particular toxin.
So guess what, Carol?
Oh, we're running out of time again.
We're running out of time again. Do you happen to have the bottle of champagne? Because
grown grapes.
This is our once a year celebration. So we want to wish all of you and yours a happy, happy new year. We love being able to share with you and to have you participate. It's so much fun for us. And we learn as well as we're able to share information. And Carol, thank you so much. Reggie, Happy New Year to you. Yeah. And thank you so much for all the help and working us out of problems that you do every single week. And Happy New Year, Carol.
Happy New Year, Corinne, and to all our listeners.
This is going to be a great year. A lot of learning, a lot of fun, and hopefully a lot of participation from you.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
In conclusion, I'd like to say, remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
For Pacifica Radio.